This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled, and I have with me here Thomas Scott, and I actually didn't told Thomas before, but I have used his product in the past. In my previous company, we used it, and we liked it very much, so I'm so pleased to have Thomas with us. And please, if you could, tell us a little bit about yourself and about the company.
Sure, of course. So I'm Tom Scott. I'm CEO of Ryke. Ryke is a collaborative work management company, helping companies manage workflows at scale. Typically complex. We focus on a number of specific use cases within that framework. We've got a pretty significant number within marketing, so creative marketing, production workflows. We do work with strategic PMO, we do work with professional services, and we do work within a manufacturing context as well. I've been with the company now for right at 3.5 years, and a little over 2 of those years as CEO. Prior to coming to Ryke, I've got a fairly long career in everything from telecom services to infrastructure to robotics and SaaS. So I've seen a wide variety of technological transformations, mobile, internet, automation, and so just a lot of recurring themes that I've been able to see. Also, everything from public companies to pre-revenue startups to Fortune 500 businesses. So I've been really fortunate to have had just a really broad variety of experiences over the course of my career.
Fantastic. And we are going to tap into some of those topics, and I'm pretty sure that some good discussions will surface and will come out of it. Normally when I talk to people as experienced as you are, without even they realize, when we speak, there are so many great points and insights will be discovered. So look forward to it. I wanted to really ask you, since you have had this experience with different companies, different fields, as you said, SaaS, other companies, how do you see the state of the kind of software business today? If you had to explain it in a tweet, in a very short way, how would you explain it to someone?
I would say that the state of software is in a very evolutionary stage at this moment in time. You've got an entire world that is hyper focused on the changes that AI are bringing, but having been through a number of these transformational cycles in the past, there's a pretty big gap between the promise of what a new technology can do and where companies are in terms of understanding where they fit in that journey. And so I'd say if you kind of look across a lot of the SaaS, the vertical SaaS companies that have been out there, everyone is talking to their customers about how do you take advantage of this? Where do you fit? And I'd say this is a very evolving conversation, kind of depending on where you are in that relationship cycle with your own customers.
And software, since the beginning, that believe or not, is not that much. I don't think even we have one century of history in software yet. It's much younger. But increasingly, every decade, it has been more and more impactful in the life of everybody person, not just technologists, but I'm talking about everyone that has benefited from software in particular and has been able to actually, you know, improve the work, the productivity, the quality of life, everything. Do you think that's accelerating? Is it going to be the next 10 years faster than the last 10 years? Is it going to be the same and continue that trend? Do you think that has stopped?
I think you're going to continue to see an acceleration. If you just take the 20 plus year arc of my, you know, my own career in technology, you have seen like each year you've got an accelerating pace that we're dealing with. And accelerating pace meaning just the rate of change that is occurring. I mean, just think about how quickly the adoption of Google as a search tool happened in the early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And compare that to how quickly you had widespread adoption of consumers using, you know, LLMs like ChatGPT or Claude. I mean, the curve is much, much steeper. Now, the adoption rate inside companies is obviously less because it gets more complex, but you can see that the appetite to be able to consume these tools quickly is continuing to accelerate. I think the other thing that really drives that pace of acceleration is software touched everyone's lives, but you were always somewhat limited by just how much you could personalize it in terms of like you personally being able to work in an environment that, you know, met your specific style. And in this era that we're going into right now, the ability to personalize at scale is now like at our fingertips. And so some of those friction points that existed before in terms of adoption, I think are going to drop down much more quickly because it used to take time to configure or customize your workspace. And that can happen at a much greater, you know, pace at this point. And so I think that's just going to continue to drive the kind of acceleration that we had seen in the past.
That's a great point. I do remember at a time, maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago, 25 years ago, self-service was the thing that you could see everywhere. From banking, 30 years ago, you were going to bank for most of the work you had. 20 years ago, less. 10 years ago, less. Now you don't go to any branch. You can do everything on your mobile phone, ATM, whatever. And all of those are self-service, so you do it. And you are happier as a consumer, as a user, because you can do it anytime you want from anywhere. And bank is happier because they don't need to really go and rent these big branches and they're downsizing all of the branches and they don't need it anymore. So on both sides, actually, now you brought up a good point that, and the same thing on the software, by the way. So self-service, I used banking as an example, but everywhere you could see self-service is just everywhere now. And every single industry is now trying to become more self-service, even software applications trying to become more self-service. And now you brought up a good point that personalization is that movement that you see now, and you will see even more of it powered by AI, that people have now more abilities than ever, and companies and software applications to actually do the personalization so every person can really optimize the experience for his or her own. And that can have a positive impact.
Absolutely. And I'll give you two examples, one inside Reich, and then one sort of personal to me is like before and after. So we, inside Reich, people have always used Reich for knowledge management. And so we're organized in sort of tasks, projects, folders, spaces, workflows. And companies have historically organized it in such a way that they were able to put, you know, knowledge in there at the task level and be able to search on that. With one of the offerings that we put into the market, a co-pilot, you can use that to really quickly surface insights and personalize that directly to your question in a way that is much more specific than what traditional search would have brought for you. So that's one example on the right side. You know, on the sort of personal side, and I think about how I do things. I'm not an engineer by training, but I've done, you know, limited coding, and I still sort of work around like the home electronics, home land, things of that nature. And if you ever had to troubleshoot something inside the house, you would find yourself burning just hours going through online chats to figure out, all right, how do I troubleshoot this particular issue? How do I find this IP address, get it mapped? And for someone like me who would do this twice a year, that was a, you know, 6-hour endeavor to go dig through that and figure it out. You know, now I can load up my diagram into any LLM along with what my configurations are, and I can have it walk me through how to fix that in seconds, which was my example from last weekend of troubleshooting the IP cameras. So you can just see these very quick examples where you can personalize it to your environment, do it very quickly with the trouble ticket steps, work through it, and be able to resolve that. And I like doing it personally because it gives me a vision of exactly how I want to see us doing it with our customers or to write internally itself.
Interesting. As somebody that, you know, I definitely respected all the time as a business experienced business leader, told me once 20 something years ago that three things matter most. One is your expertise, your experience, and then credibility. And if you can really build up on these three every day and improve it, then you're going to be, you know, successful, very successful. And do you think that now we live in a kind of world that, based on just what you said, the expertise is going to be easier to attain, and it's not as, you know, difficult as before to really be expert, because now we can augment the AI part with our knowledge, and you can gain it much faster?
Answer to that, it's a complicated answer, I believe, because you have to step back and first say what is happening with publicly available information. And if you really just kind of, to use your initial example, if you put the tweet out of what is happening to public data in an LLM world, it's being rapidly commoditized. And so for you and I as consumers of public information, that's great. It puts it right at our fingertips, but it puts it at everyone else's fingertips also. And so the ability to essentially carve out differentiation on anything that is publicly available is in the process of going to zero. So for me as a consumer, I love that because I can get my hands on it really quickly, efficiently. I can do things that would have taken me 6 hours in my example, and I can now do it in 6 minutes. As the CEO of a business that innovates and provides solutions to customers, I think it means that you have to really closely examine the flip side of that equation. And that means understanding where are the information gaps to actually be able to deliver value to customers? Because it's not in the public realm. It's in actually understanding how do people work, and where is that private data that is not accessible in the public realm? And, you know, one of the ways that we position Wrike is we see it as a system of record for work. And a system of record for work is really just another way of saying it's private data and it's context that exists within that particular situation. And we try and enrich that by going even deeper into solutions such as marketing and client service delivery, those other examples that I gave you, because the closer you get to being fluent in a particular domain. Again, the better context that you get from that enabling. And so I don't think that the formula that you were talking about of like expertise, experience, and credibility goes away. I think it certainly changes, because you can't rely on the fact that there's an arbitrage on public data. And one of the ways that I really try and model that internally is I'm an enormous believer in dog fooding, meaning we use our own product. And we've always used Reich, but as we're in this new era of rolling out different AI-enabled capabilities, I expect us to be doing that as well. And so I'm pushing us to kind of redefine how we do processes inside the company, really focused on a zero basis, meaning understand how we do it today, be like a deep expert in what we were doing, and then be prepared to completely blow it up if it doesn't work anymore, and really sort of think about what we're trying to accomplish as an organization. So use your prior experience, use your understanding of what got us there. But to be credible, you've got to really understand what's possible in the world today, because then you can turn around to your customers and say, I'm not asking you to do something that I didn't already do myself.
Interesting. Now, when it comes to Reich, and based on what you have seen in the company in the last few years, and at this point, you see that this new technology is coming and changes, what do you expect to see either in the domain that you are working or just in the company in the next 5 years?
So there are a couple areas that I would point to on this. We started off our conversation kind of highlighting the fact that every person, every company is actively talking about AI in some form or fashion. When you get beneath the surface on that a little bit, though, you see that companies are adopting at very different, you know, paces. You've got those that are exploring. You've got those that are doing pilots today. You've got a small number that are advancing at more of a production pace to be able to get there. And where I've really tried to guide Reich is to this idea that we have to be willing to meet customers where they are today. Because you can get very caught up in exactly what's being talked about on LinkedIn and in Silicon Valley. But you also have to recognize that not every company is part of that same ecosystem, that they're interested at the same level, but they may not be adopting at that same pace. Is recognition for that, we've built out a couple of frameworks that we work with on our customers. So earlier this year, we put out the ability for us to work with an MCP server. And that was a recognition that not all customers are going to want to access, you know, in application AI insights. That they're going to want to be able to control the insights on their own, where Reich has got that system of record for their work, and they're going to pair that together with data in other sources and sort of bring your own LLM approach. And so that was something we brought out to the market in Q2. We have a Copilot infrastructure. And within that Copilot infrastructure, you're able to use it as a knowledge management tool. You're able to use it to surface insights on your workflows, pattern recognition, challenges that you've got. It's very accessible for local insights within the tool. And then as part of our user conference coming up, we'll be talking about the launch of agents. And, you know, for me, the agents are a way to continue to automate and unlock, you know, a lot of the ROI that is really inherent there. And that really sits within, you know, three basic areas for us. It's intelligent data intake and assignment. So you're able to automate that process. It's about automated reporting where you've got triggers to be able to launch that. And then it's about content generation. So that's the kind of the first step. And I envision us continuing to do more of that and pairing it with those solution verticals that we were talking about as well. So you continue to drive that level of specificity with how we're operating with our customers today.
Yeah, you mentioned a number of things, including, you know, the agentic AI, including MCP, that is, you know, going to be a very useful protocol to help AI agents, you know, get access to different applications and different sources of information. And, you know, developing any of these will take a lot of time and resources. And you can think of probably many, many different use cases that how you can implement MCP and how to utilize it within your product and how to really leverage that technology. And each of those use cases may take 1 or 2 quarters on the product roadmap, resources be there. Now, the question is that if I use the example and metaphor of using, you know, and comparing this with mobile, when the very first real, you know, a smartphone like iPhone with app market, with kind of people could go there and just add apps to their phone. That was the revolution when it happened. And then many companies back then, I remember that they went on a very fast track and they thought that mobile is going to be the future. No desktop, no laptop would be available 5-10 years from now. And even in analytic worlds that I lived back then, and in our world, then many analytic companies just, they said, that's it. We are going to put our bet on mobile and we don't bet on desktop and laptops and old fashioned browsers and these kind of things anymore. And it didn't pan out. I don't remember those names. Even I don't remember them. Some of those companies do not exist. And the same thing in AI for, you know, software leaders like yourself, the question is, what is the right pace to really go there and implement these? Is it the right time? Is it going to change? And then some of the efforts we are putting there 2 years from now can't be done totally differently. So I should have waited for 2 years before I pull the trigger. How do you really decide? How do you really think that what is the right pace? Or should we rush it? As some people, especially in Silicon Valley, advise that go as fast as you can. Should we really ignore it and say this is just hype for now? Let's wait and see and do nothing. Should we really go at the kind of a pace that makes sense and is purely based on really the use cases that make sense and bring real value to customers in the next few months? How would you really look at it and gauge your kind of, you know, resources and attempts to really get there?
I think the point you were just making of focusing on where you can deliver return now is the critical question. You know, to me, vision is incredibly important. Like you have to set the North Star of where you think, you know, where you think the industry is going and where you think you can play your role in it based on your sort of assets and capabilities. However, you definitely cannot divorce yourself from, are you solving a pain point for a relevant customer now? Because when you kind of going back to your mobile example of let's burn all the boats and let's go down the mobile path, you can find yourself getting pretty far away from, you know, how your customers are experiencing you right at this point in time. And the way I try and balance this is we do have a vision, but we are constantly validating this with our customers. And you, for a company like Ryk that has everything from Fortune 500, extremely large businesses, all the way down to the tiniest of the tiny, you have to kind of capture this in different buckets. So we work with customer advisory boards for our bigger customers. We work with community on the lower end, and then within these sort of new innovations that you and I are talking about here, we frequently work with early adopters to help shape roadmap, where I almost think of it as like co-creating the future, where we'll bring them an idea or vice versa. We'll bring them into the road mapping. They'll be testing this with us, and then they'll come out and be willing to talk about the results that they're able to generate. And it's a way for us to validate, hey, you were working this way. You were one of like our better customers within like this particular use case. We have now built this, which in, at least in our mind, advances what you're trying to do. Does it? And like, does it legitimately make, you know, this workflow better for you? Now, going into the question of how much do you actually invest, I also try and think about this as we should not have a standalone AI bet as an organization. You know, we are a work management company that has, you know, evolved over the last 20 years. So if you go back to the very beginning, we started out as like task and project management. And over this time period, we've become increasingly more complex with resource management, workflows at scale, the specific solution verticals I was talking about, that I view this as another evolution as opposed to a side bet. And we invested in this to advance where we needed to be, but I view this as merging into the other aspects of how the business works. And that's why I was pointing out we have to meet customers where they are and how they're willing to work with us on this technology, because it, you know, everyone says AI, but AI is not monolithic. It, you know, the way it actually gets applied is extremely differentiated, and some use cases are better than others, which is the approach that I'm trying to take to get the right balance.
Yeah, absolutely true. I'm going to change gears and ask you a question not very relevant to what we have discussed so far. I wanted to know if you wanted to add to recommend me a city that I should really go and just visit, and I can't pick any time I want, and you can recommend, hey, go there at this particular month or this time. What would be that city that you say, Armand, go and just see this city. I like it very much. You would like it too. And go, by the way, during summertime or wintertime or something like that.
You catch me a little bit on recency bias. So I have had the good fortune to have traveled all over the world my entire life. One of the places, though, that I had not been until June was Istanbul. And that was just an amazing experience. I mean, you have to be into, you have to really be into history and language and culture, but I thought that was just such an amazing experience. I must have taken 2,000 photos of just walking around. So that highly recommend, but again, recency bias.
No, great recommendation. I have nice memories. I have been there once, and it was 98, and I really liked it.
It was hot.
Yeah, and then... So definitely, no, I can understand. I mean, there's some great, it's a great city, definitely a great city. My last question is about really a book that, or if you want more than a book, but at least a book that you can recommend, either personally you liked it or professionally you thought it's very impactful in what you do.
You know, so you and I were talking earlier in our conversation that I followed the founder here. And that was a little bit of an intimidating follow, because I have a great deal of respect for the founder, and really any founder. And I've had the good fortune to work with several that had created categories. You know, Andrew created this category. The founder I worked with before helped create a category within robotics. But the one thing you always know is in founder-led businesses, almost all roads lead to the founder. And when you are following in a situation like that, you have to be really cognizant of what you are and what you are not. And I was not going to try to be the second coming of a founder. It would not have been authentic. And what I have tried to style myself on is building a company that continues to highly value innovation, but also looks to rebuild decision-making processes so it is scalable. And we're building up like multiple levels to be able to continue growing this business over time. And what you find when you go through this is when you're going through this redesign exercise or the system thinking exercise, in some cases you add friction, and in other cases you end up removing friction that you wish you had not. And so one of the books that really resonated with me was Friction by Robert Hutton. And I came across it, I don't know, six, 9 months into doing this job. And I read it on a flight to India. And so much of what was in there just like deeply resonated with what we were going through at the time. And I've used that kind of sporadically with the executive team here to make points on our job is to balance friction across this organization. If it's something getting in the way of growth, innovation, decision-making, we need to make it go away. If it is something that we're putting in place to make sure that we don't go through the wrong door, let's make sure there's a tinge of friction there. But I highly recommend that book if you've not read it.
Fantastic. I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. And again, it was great having you. And thank you for joining us on SaaSScale.
Armand, thank you so much. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for listening to SaaSScaled with Armand Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to SaaSScaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.